When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Hey, welcome to Here For It. I'm your host, Erica Muller. Each week, we'll be talking all things life, fashion and beauty, personal development, and probably some pop culture along the way as well. Here For It is your weekly space to get grounded, regroup, and be inspired to live your best life. Because really, we're all figuring it out as we go. And I'm so here for it. Hello, hello. Welcome to Here For It. My name is Erica Muller. For anyone new around here, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. And if you're not new around here, welcome back. I'm so happy to have you too. I feel very fortunate and grateful to have met so many incredible people along the journey of having this podcast. I've gotten to speak to some really kind, ambitious, smart, hardworking, determined women. And today's guest is of no exception. I have Hannah Ryu on the podcast, and she is a co-founder of the design studio Oak Theory. And one of the reasons I'm really excited about this episode is that I haven't had an episode like this before where we're talking about the tech space and women in tech and how technology affects all of us literally all day long. And so having this conversation was pretty eye-opening to me and also made me appreciate so much more of the technology that I deal with day in and day out. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know that I consider myself a little bit of a documentary nerd. I really like learning about different things and different industries and things that aren't in my day-to-day life, or if they are in my day-to-day life, learning deeper about them. Like, for example, we all use electricity, right? Like, I know that when I turn on the light switch, the light is going to turn on or off. But how often do you think about like how electricity is actually working? I don't think about it. I don't know how it works. I just know that when I flip the switch, I'm going to have light in my kitchen. So things like that. And I recently watched this documentary called Objectified, and it's older. I think it's from like the early 2000s. But the premise of that documentary is about product design, the physical products that we are dealing with day in and day out, the spatula that you use when you're making scrambled eggs, the chair that you're sitting in, this microphone that I'm speaking into, the design and shape of your iPhone and where they shaved off just a little corner so it fits a little bit differently in your hand. All of those things that are just, we don't even think about, were meticulously thought about by somebody else. And in relation to this podcast episode, what Hannah is doing at Oak Theory is essentially the digital version of that. So that app that you opened this morning to check your email, Instagram, TikTok, the weather app, the notes app that I have on my computer that I use all the time, never once have I considered that somebody had to sit down and map out how this notes app works. It's just always there and I use it. So to have this conversation and learn about the things that are in our daily lives all day and the deeper reason behind them and how they're thought through and why they're thought through in certain ways was very interesting to me. And so I hope you find this episode interesting as well. We also talk a lot about the importance of women and women of color in tech, what that space looks like currently, how every single one of us is affected by UX, UI, and what that is, why she's pro AI, optimizing your life, imposter syndrome, moving through life with curiosity. We touch on a lot of different things in this episode, and Hannah's just really smart, and I think what they're doing in the tech space is really needed and really incredible. Their resumes have names like Disney, HBO, Estee Lauder, Oprah, Sephora. It goes on and on and on. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you are an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, somebody who's considering a side hustle or anything in the digital space where you need a digital presence, she gives a lot of good advice, where to start, where to spend money, where to save money, and the importance of different design elements within it. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. And here is Hannah. All right. Well, I'm really excited to talk to you today. Tech is something that I'm really fascinated by, but I truly just don't know much about it. At Oak Theory, I know that you all specialize in UX, UI, web, and application design. Can you define some of that terminology just for anyone who might be unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because I live in the world, sometimes I forget when we say certain words. So UX, UI is a common term that we use in the world of product design or application design and even web design. And what it really means, the actual word for it, is user experience and user interface. And so the philosophy at the heart of UX UI is when we're designing anything out, whether it be an application, like an app on your phone, to a website like Airbnb, we want to consider for the actual user experience of it. So not only making it look pretty, but making sure that it's intuitive and that the user experience is really seamless, so that the design of it, we call it human-centered design. And so we're really thinking about the person behind the application who's using it. And so the way we go about it is really data-driven. So we'll do user research. So we'll do surveys or qualitative interviews, really understand the person behind the person who's going to be using it, and making sure that we're really accounting for their pain points, the user experience, the journey, the steps, and making sure that it's all seamless and that it flows nicely. So that's what UX UI is. And so at Oak Theory, that's kind of our bread and butter. And so whether we're designing an application or designing a website or coming up with a brand, so the colors, the brand voice, all of it is based on, it's centered around the user. So the person who's using it. And it's really important because I could sit here and like help build a brand, but at Oak Theory, we have a certain perspective and then the client might have a different perspective. But what we're trying to really get at is, you know, who's the main audience, who's the main user, and what are they looking for?
When I was preparing for this episode, it became very apparent to me, and it's not something that I've ever considered, but I was like, oh my gosh, like we are all so affected by UX UI and we just don't even realize it. Like the fact that every website I go on to, every app that I open, every email inbox I'm in, I'm like, somebody designed this and like planned out like how we're going to use it. But yeah. I just feel like it's so embedded into our lives that we just don't even think that there was like intention behind it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I always like to like talk about an easy use case. This could be in person, the experience in person as well as online. And now that we're a lot more like online and a lot of our experiences are digital, it's more prominent. But I think about government websites or your experience at the DMV. Yeah. It's a poor, you know, poor user experience. And so with the limited time that we have here on Earth, I think of it, how do we make each experience optimal and most, you know, joyful as much as possible? And so when you're, you know, using an application or website and you're not thinking too much about your usage, that's typically a good sign that it has good user interface.
That DMV is like a perfect example. I think everybody dreads the day that they're like, oh my God, I have to go renew my license.
Yeah.
Or deal with anything like that because it's frustrating. It like loops you back in circles. You can never go where you actually need. But again, I'm not considering, oh, somebody designed this and it just like wasn't designed well.
Yeah, exactly.
So can you share a little bit about like what led to the creation of Oak Theory and what your approach to the tech space is?
Yeah. So let's see. We started March of 2020. So right when the pandemic was starting, but our backstory is myself and my business partner, my co-founder V, shout out to V, she's my rock. We both come from the design, product design background. And so I come from a product management background. So working with designers, software engineers, the customer, the business to design and build a product for a market. So I come from a SaaS background. V comes from a product design and creative direction background. And so we were in this world. She's a Black woman. I'm an Asian American woman. And in our world of Silicon Valley, working in software, product design, there just isn't a lot of folks that look like us. I used to joke around at my corporate or startup job, and I would ask people like, hey, does anyone have a hair tie? As a joke, because like no one did, because I was one of the only few women. And, you know, there's a few people who look like us at the ground level, like doing the design work, doing, you know, development. But as you go up the ranks in leadership, there is less and less folks who look like us, especially women and women of color. Mm-hmm. And the reason it matters is because of how often we use interfaces and applications, like all these decisions are used by so many people, all of us. You know, it's a diverse group of people who actually use what we build. But we felt that in who's in the room, you know, giving direction or leading the efforts, it's pretty homogenous. And so we started our studio really with the mission of shifting more diverse perspectives into digital design. And so we work with companies, you know, we've had the fortune of working with really great companies in the last 3 years. We work with startups that really resonate with our mission because of their audience, maybe, or their product is really culture driven. And we work with companies that are building cool energy SaaS interfaces, and they understand that diverse perspective brings innovation. And so, you know, we've been really fortunate, and we've worked with really cool brands and products and across many different industries.
Yeah. I mean, your resume is really impressive. You've worked with Disney, HBO, Sephora.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think within the last couple of years, I think we've all seen like the wave of diversity and equity and inclusion. It's become more of a buzz term and more of a trendy topic. But I think what businesses are understanding that it's really good for business is that when your marketing tactics or your campaigns or your experiences resonate with a more diverse group of folks, more people will buy and be your customers. And so I think businesses are starting to really understand that it's not just a quota to me, but it's a good business strategy.
As it should be, as it always should have been, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I'm curious where your interest in STEM comes from, because when I was growing up, there really weren't many programs that highlighted STEM. And so it wasn't ever really on my radar. I know now that there's like more efforts being put into STEM, and especially for women. Like I know Carly Kloss and her Code with Klossy nonprofit has done really well and had a lot of success. But I'm so curious, like what hooked you into this industry?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think so. I went to college, I studied Arabic, and I studied international relations.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I was going to be a photojournalist. And then I worked at a nonprofit and worked at a magazine, and then got into product at a tech company. And so my background is pretty, I would say, random. And it was really driven by just curiosity at the moment. I'm like, what am I curious about right now? And I think that's at the heart of innovation and tech, I would say. But all to say that I'm not a developer, I'm not a software engineer. V is our design director. And so I think for me, being a business owner now, running our studio from more of a client side and sales side, and also as a product manager at a tech company, that curiosity played a really huge role in, and also being able to communicate, being able to facilitate and, you know, manage across different groups of folks, all of that, you know, because we all play different parts in a tech company or in you know, in software to design anything. There's engineers, but there's a design team, there's a customer, there's a business group. It's a diverse group of folks. And so I was at the center of bringing all of them together. And so I think for me, being learning a different language in college, being curious about different backgrounds and cultures, like all of that led to a place where, you know, I could help lead a company that is working in different industries and with different customers.
I love that. I love this idea of curiosity and not being like, I mean, some people, I think from a very young age, they're like, I want to be a musician. And then they go on to be like super successful and ultra famous, you know, and it's like kind of in their DNA.
Right,
but I think that's less common for most of us. I think we're all kind of trying to like navigate and figure out like what feels good. And I love curiosity in the sense that like you're in one area and then it like slowly leads you to somewhere completely different. So I love that that was your experience.
Yeah, I think I personally just believe that we have a lot of lives to live in our one life. And like, why not? Like, who says we have to be this one thing? You know, that's all made up too. You know, I really believe that's all made up. It keeps us in our lanes, or, you know, how society wants us to play specific roles. But especially as a woman, like, what if you want to do multiple things? What if you want to run multiple businesses and we're multifaceted? Like, why is that such a sin? Like, why is that looked down upon? I think there's some people definitely specialize, and thank God for like neurosurgeons who are really specialized in their trade. But for a lot of us, and I think I always felt like the Jill of all trades, I enjoyed multiple things. I don't want to get too deep into one specific thing. And I think there is a lot of strength in that too. And so we just need people who are great at, you know, specific skills. And then those of us who like to, just lead with our curiosity and see how things could come together. And that's how V and I've run our business and our studio, and just using our brains to put things together, or working in a financial tech with a financial tech client. And we draw inspiration from what we did with the e-commerce client. So it's, how do we bring things together? And I think that spurs creativity. You know, if you're working at a studio like ours, or if you run an agency like ours, it's really, we always say we get to start fresh all the time. And so like we'll always do retros, for example, with a project and see like what went well, what didn't go well, and we'll apply to a future project. But to your point about industries, yeah, all the time. Like we, you know, last year was a big push. There was a big wave of crypto. In the world. And so we got to work with crypto companies, and we saw, you know, the ebbs and flows of that experience. And then this year, you know, Google, Meta, these huge tech companies were having huge layoffs. And so we have partners and, you know, folks that are in those companies. And so we got to hear from them of what's happening. And so, yeah, we get to see a gamut. We get to see, you know, all different industries. We see like how the market goes up and down. And that's just part of business, like, leaders, I think just owning a business, you have to get used to the up and down, but you also, you know, you get to experience and see how every industry has their great, you know, good times and bad times. And there is a lot of crossover as well, especially in UX UI. So we take a lot of our inspiration from consumer facing. So a lot of our design is centered around the user, right? And so we see that a lot in healthcare, for example, or in government, as another example, is they didn't really care as much about the user experience. There's not too much competition. People will come to them anyway. Customers will buy from them, or we'll have to go to DMV. We can't go anywhere else to renew our licenses. But there is a huge push for more user friendly, user experience led design in those industries as well. And that's where we've been able to come in and use our expertise to help guide these more antiquated, older industries to, you know, be more consumer friendly.
Can you share a little bit about what the back end of all of that looks like? Like, how do you know, like, how are you able to track like KPIs for a business and know, yes, this interface is working, or no, it's not?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so we specialize in the front end part a bit more. So we're in the front end design, but we'll work with either the company's dev team, development team, or a third party that they're working with, we could see Google Analytics and see how long people are staying on the page. You know, like this, I don't know if the stat has changed, but people typically spend 7 seconds on a website before they bounce. And so the hero or the first thing that you see on the page is really important. And so we prioritize that. We make sure, you know, is it easy for people to click into the experience that they're looking for? And we call it a CTA, call to action. And so, you know, anywhere we want, we're trying to help the user get to what they're looking for. And so we'll use analytics, page views, clicks to see that, you know, to see how it's improved.
Okay. I want to bring up AI because I think AI is something people are, they're either really curious about or they're really skeptical about, but it's something that's at this point, I think, affecting all of us. Where does AI play into what you guys are doing?
It's a huge opportunity for us in our world. It could definitely make companies like us defunct. Is that the word? Defunct. It could, you know, it could really, that the technology is so powerful and it's beautiful and scary in the same light. But the way we've gone about it is we're using it to leverage what we're already doing. And so whether it be, so right now, for example, if you, you know, I'm sure people who are listening or you have like, you know, use ChatGPT or different types of AI tools, we see it as kind of like a brainstormer helper intern. And so it's not, you know, it's not going to give us the answers, especially in the creative realm, because creative design is so much more than just input and output. Mm-hmm. It's putting like multiple data points together or different perspectives together to create something that resonates. And so what we'll do is utilize AI tools like Midjourney. Midjourney is a graphic design AI tool. And so we'll use it to, you know, prompt different illustrations, for example, for something that maybe we'll use on a website. So we recently designed a site for a neuroscientist at Columbia University for her lab. And so part of that experience, we wanted to create an illustration that really captured the essence of the lab with like brain neurons and mice and all these different elements. And so it's hard to find that in a stock image or in, you know, unless we're going to go get an illustrator to custom illustrate. And so we leveraged AI for that part portion of the project. And so it's my partner could probably, the design side could probably talk a lot more about this, but it's really knowing how to prompt your tool to get you the results you need. And even still, then we would take it in-house and tweak it and alter it and customize it to make it perfect. Sometimes like the AI tool will come out with like a hand with like 6 fingers. And so just making it just more accurate and realistic and custom to what we're needing. So we'll, you know, we use it for things like that in design. We'll use it for to help us brainstorm on copy or content. It's really a great, we say it's kind of like an like our coworker intern who never needs coffee but never needs sleep, and they always have something to tell us, like an idea to spit back so we could go back and forth. It's a really great idea generating tool for us, and yeah, we're definitely, you know, utilizing it. We have a fully remote team. And so, and we have folks in all different areas of the world. And so even in language and communication, people whose English isn't their first language, like our team in Eastern Europe, while they're so amazing at speaking two languages and being able to work in a second language, sometimes when we're doing client-facing communication, they'll use an AI tool to just double check their words. But definitely different levels. And I think AI is just going to get stronger as we use it more, and it's outputting the data that we're all inputting. And that's the other thing about having, I don't know if you've seen these like memes or like Reddit threads about AI producing like really like racist content or like imagery, is because it's just reflecting like our society. It's like taking our data. It's not like, it's taking our data and telling us what we want, what we most likely want to hear or see. And so we have to really also utilize it with good judgment and understanding that it's not bias free because it's just using, you know, it's reflecting us.
That makes a lot of sense that if we're inputting things, it's obviously going to collect that data and like sort it how it sees fit to sort. So if you're only feeding it certain things, of course, it's only going to produce certain things. It's like we have responsibility in all these other areas of life. Of course, it should apply to AI.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to bring up Instagram for a second because I think I would assume anybody listening is probably a user. And they're probably active on Instagram. But they are someone or a company that I've noticed, like they're constantly updating their UX UI. Like every time you log in, it's like a different layout. Things are different. You can see likes, you can't see likes, you can see comments, you know, what, like, do you have a theory as to why they're doing that? Because I'm assuming there must be an intention behind it. But as a user, I'm like, I find it frustrating.
Yeah, that's a good example. I would say they're constantly testing. So in tech and in product, we're constantly testing out to see what might work, what might resonate. Not all of it will work, but we will never know until we put it out and test it out there. So we call it in tech, we call it MVP. It means minimal viable product. It doesn't apply to Instagram as much because they're such an established technology and company, but within features, they're constantly testing out. And I think you see this in Spotify as well, just constantly testing out different features. They'll do A/B testing where you might get hit with a feature that I might not even have access to yet. And they're seeing how people are reacting to it, how users are interacting with it, what's not working, getting data and learnings from it to make the next change. And so within product design, it's like iterative. Everything is always, there's no endpoint. It's always constantly changing. And that's what I love about product design and life is there is no end there. We're just trying our best to make the changes that we think the user wants or what they're needing at this time. But by next year, it might be outdated, or, you know, we might have better technology or better use cases for it. And so it's just constantly iterative changes, new features to test out, seeing what sticks and what's, you know, it's getting big reactions. Maybe there's some publicity in there, right? So it's just iterative change.
That is such a great explanation because I'm logged into two Instagram accounts. I have my personal page and then I have the one for this podcast. And they're completely different. Like the layouts are completely different. And so the fact that you're saying, oh, they're testing to see what's working makes so much sense. But every time I switch from one to the other, I'm like, what is the point of this?
Yeah. And it's so crazy how quickly we get used to features too, right? Like it becomes like second nature. Yeah. Or even I remember when Apple came out with the MacBook Pro with the side, like I forget what they call
it. Oh, the touch bar.
Yeah, the touch bar, like it just did really poorly. And so, you know, they took it back and they don't have it anymore. And so it's all of these things are just to see, I think companies do their best with user research to before they push anything out. But a lot of times you won't get the full experience of like what we call edge cases, like things that you don't think of, like these companies like Apple, they're huge companies with so much resources that could spend a lot of money on doing testing. But there are still scenarios where it really just needs to be in the real world for us to get good feedback to make changes. And so we always tell our clients, like especially startup clients, like don't get so hung up on getting it perfect. You won't. We could do all the research we want, but until it's out there in the world, you're just never going to get the feedback. And the more important thing is to get it out in the world so you could get feedback and learn quickly. And that's also true for like our lives, right? Like we could sit in our room, like studying till the end, you know, for the whole year on one subject, but unless you go get tested or go out and take a test or, you know, get in the ring and, you know, test out your skills, like you just won't know where you need to improve or what changes you have to make.
If somebody is listening and they're like, I'm starting a business or I have a business and I know I need a website, is there something you would suggest that they start with looking at? And then also for that like testing period of like, is this working? How long should someone give like a website or something before they're like, oh, this isn't working. Like we need to change something.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we do get approached, especially if you're listening and you're like a solo entrepreneur or you're just starting a business. And you know, you're bootstrapping, you don't have like huge resources to spend thousands of dollars on a website. What I would recommend, we always say like, because I think, and we've actually done this with a few of our clients who've come to us. They're like, we have this much money to spend. We want to spend it on like creating a whole brand. And for us, we're like, you don't have a brand yet. You have to build your brand. Don't spend that money on building your brand book with colors and all the fonts for your site with the right logo. Build something that gives value to your customers first. So whether that be a landing page, like a simple page or a simple website that tells people what you do, your services. And then when you are starting to get traction, then maybe invest more into building out your brand in totality. And so there's just a little, it's a little bit of like, put out, again, it's like the MVP philosophy, put out what you can with what you have. And then from there, your customer feedback will naturally lead you to expanding your brand. And so I would say for new business owners, entrepreneurs looking to put themselves out there through a website, you know, there's so many great resources with Squarespace or with, you know, these really self-service tools. You don't have to work with an agency like us where, you know, ours is a lot, our price level might be too high if you're just starting out and there's no need. I would say it's not the best use of your money. I would say just use the tools that you have access to, build out what you can, add the content copy and the imagery that you can. And then from there, you know, get customer feedback and then you'll know how to continue to evolve from there.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's helpful for people to know like, oh my God, but I only have this much money because I haven't really like started growing yet. And like, I'm stressed, you know? So to have that kind of perspective, I think is really valuable for people to be like, okay, I can like start with where I'm at and like, I can grow.
Yeah, for sure. I would say that's always like the best way to go about it. Unless you have a lot of money to spend and, you know, build that out, which is great too. Then you could call us.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, I have one more question for you. What do you hope to see in the next few years in the tech space?
So I'll give you a stat that's pretty staggering that we recently learned about. Found out, we did some research through a website called Clutch. They're a B2B service-based service like reviewer. They suggest different agencies and studios and service providers for B2B clients. We did a search and we knew that we were a small percentage of those who look like us in our industry, but we found out that we are 0.1%, not even 1%, 0.1% of within product design that is women of color founded and led. Yeah, 0.1%. And I think it was like 22,000 agencies out of the 22,000 agencies. And so I would love to see just, it's not even about just like having more women or folks of color. It's just a diversity in this industry. It's like, I think sometimes what's inhibiting is when you don't see it already, when you don't see an example of it, it's hard to imagine it. And so like, if I don't see another like woman of color run agency, like, I don't know, maybe that's not possible. Or maybe that's, you know, there's a reason for that, but it's just, no, it's just, that's just the way it's been. It doesn't have to be like that anymore. And so I think, and that goes like all around, whether you're in entertainment or you're in tech or you're in finance, like if you don't see someone that looks like you in a position, well, you could be the first one. It might be a little bit harder, but we need you there so that someone else can look at you and be like, oh, that's possible. Right. And so I think just for the people who are already, they already know where they want to go next, but it might feel more intimidating because there's not someone who looks like you in that industry. Maybe it's the way you talk. Maybe it's the way you present. And I think that's something that we, you know, V and I have definitely come across. It's like the way we present is super casual. It's not super like, techie. I don't know. Like, but they're it's multifaceted. People are really, you know, multifaceted, and we need different types of people in all different positions. And I'm definitely guilty of this too. Like, I would look at someone and be like, oh, like, I wouldn't assume they're in a certain field, but they are. And it's badass and it's mind boggling, but we need more of that, of just people going after the positions and industry, starting businesses and whatever they want to do, and seeing the hurdle of not being represented as like a reason to do it even more.
Yeah. I love that you guys are out here like being that change. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do that, and you're spreading your message, and I love that. And I'm here to support you guys as much as I can. I love what you're doing. And I find, like I said at the beginning, I find tech so fascinating and I wish I knew more about it. So thank you so much for everything you've shared today. It's been so amazing to learn. And I think everybody listening has taken stuff away from this too. So please let everybody know where they can find you, where they can learn more about Oak Theory, anything you want to share.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for having me. And I'll be honest, I think it's a similar like imposter syndrome for me. It was like, is coming onto podcasts and is talking about our industry from where we're sitting. That's sometimes definitely something that I experience, like, oh, am I qualified enough? I think that's something that we all, a lot of us experience, whichever position you're in. But the more we do it, the more normal it will be. And so that's really what I believe in. But anyways, you could find us on oaktheory.co, we're .co, and on Instagram, oaktheory.co, and on LinkedIn. We're trying to do a little bit more marketing, so we have a little more presence there. But yeah, and you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love chatting with people who are in starting a business, have different ideas, and so love to chat.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.